Hey, everybody. Welcome to the A1 Auto Body Podcast with your host, Nick Sands. Today, I have on my buddy, Alex LaChance from East Key Realty. Alex is a real estate agent based out of New Hampshire, and he's absolutely just an awesome dude. I've known him for a little bit, and he's just a cool guy, and I'm excited to have you on. How's it going, Alex?
Going great, Nick. Thanks for having me.
One weird thing about this new setup is there's no way for me to see the audio levels. That's not pertinent to anything. I just was talking about it.
All right. Well, we'll see how it works out. Right?
Yeah. Hopefully this is recording. So I am super interested to hear, because I know that I've heard you and a couple other real estate agents kind of talking about the market right now and how it's like absolutely insane. I don't even really understand enough about real estate to know what to ask, but I would love to kind of hear a little bit of your opinion on like what's going on and what's weird about right now.
So, I mean, I've heard everything, it described as everything from a housing shortage to a housing crisis. I don't like to use the word crisis. Should be enough houses for everybody. But whether or not you can afford them or not is a different take. What I'm running into, we were talking a little bit before we start, but I work with a lot of first-time home buyers, a lot of people with blue-collar budgets. Those are my people. That's my background before I was doing real estate. And it's really, really competitive out there in that market. I go from house to house where they have 20 to 30 offers before I've even gotten there. You have to make really strong, aggressive offers on a house to get one. And if you're doing things with minimal down payments, or, you know, you're using certain loan programs that require the house to be in certain conditions, that would make the seller have to do repairs, you're getting to the bottom of the list of those 25 offers, because there's people showing up with cash. And I could break any of this down pretty deeply if you wanted to. I don't know what route you want to go here. But basically, the values just keep going up. I think year over year, the last numbers I saw, and it depends on what county, what market you're talking about, but 15% growth in a year. I mean, think about any investment that you've ever made in your life. Like, if you got 15% returns, you'd be pretty happy, you know. It's crazy, and it's not stopping anytime soon. New Hampshire has more people moving in than moving out. And we're the only New England state that's like that. I think if you hyper-focus on the Boston metro area, the data was showing that they were still growing, but everywhere else in New England, more people are moving out than moving in. And we're the opposite in New Hampshire. Meanwhile, houses that are getting built are all high end. Apartments that are getting built are all high end. You see in Manchester here, the mill buildings getting converted into pretty high end apartments. So as far as affordable housing and housing in general, it's just what we call a low inventory market, and everything's a bidding war. Everything's competitive.
Is this growth normal for like the whole country, or is it just here right now that they're kind of experiencing this?
So I look very little at the rest of the country, to be honest. I know we are on the high end. I'm 3 years in, and it's kind of funny. When I started, we were having the same conversation. It's gotten nothing but crazier, you know? And you saw from time to time over the last 3 years of, oh, it's starting to turn around, you know, and everyone's like, okay, it's going to be a bubble. It's going to crash. And where I thought it was turning around when I'd look, it would be other parts of the country, and not reflective of New Hampshire. And people look at national headlines. I mean, we're all tied on social media. We have friends in California, friends in Florida, Alabama, wherever. So everyone's seeing these national headlines, and really it's done nothing but accelerate here in New Hampshire, no matter what else has gone on. And I don't see it changing anytime soon. As far as normal, no. I mean, this is unprecedented. Even talking to agents that were around in the early 2000s when we had a bubble and a crash, they say they've never seen it like this. I mean, it's just crazy.
As far as being an agent, is now would now be considered like a good time to get into the like world of becoming an agent, or would not be considered a bad time?
It's funny, you know, I hear it all the time. Oh, it must be a great time to be a real estate agent. And, you know, we're getting anywhere from, you know, 2 to 3% usually on each transaction of the sales price. So if you're talking, you know, the values have gone up $100,000, that's not a huge difference for us. You know, so the value is going up. Yeah. I mean, overall at the end of the year, if I did the same amount of transactions as I did last year, yeah, I'm going to make more money because the values are higher. Right. But, it's just challenging. If you're working with a buyer, I mean, tomorrow I'm here in Manchester. I'm going out to New Durham and Wolfboro, because I have a buyer with a low budget and it just doesn't fit around here. And you know, he started looking around here, but it's just not going to work for him, you know? So as a buyer's agent, you're running around all over the place. And sometimes you got to make 10 offers for the same client before you get one accepted. So from that aspect, I'd say it's a challenging time. It's never a bad time. You know, you fired up your own business, you know, it's just, you know, do it no matter when it is. It's always a good time. And if you don't have that mindset, you're going to fail. And then on the flip side, if you want to work with sellers, there's just not many of them. You know, we're all fighting for the same few sellers. You know, if somebody has a listing expire, which is pretty rare now, but that seller is getting a call from 45 real estate agents to say, hey, we'd like to list your house, you know, because there's just not much out there. So it's always a good time. Yes, it's good time, but it's a challenging time. And honestly, I look at it at the new people starting right now and I'm like, man, it was hard for me to work with buyers when I started, because you have to, it's a learning curve of how to get offers accepted in a seller's market like this. I look at some people starting now, I'm like, man, I can't even imagine what you're going to go through when you walk out with your first buyer, you know, cause you're not going to be prepared for. I made an offer last week, $50,000 over asking price, and we didn't get it, because of other terms. You know, it's not always just the price. There's other terms that we had, you know, no control over. We did the best we could, but we just were beat. So, it's a challenge.
I would imagine if you could make it, like if you're getting started now and you can make it now, then like in the future, things may kind of be a little easier once you kind of make it through the rough times, the easier times, you know, they kind of prepare you for these times.
Absolutely. Like my broker is kind of, for lack of a better term, your boss in real estate, even though we don't really have bosses. But she owns the company, supervises me, make sure I don't get sued and don't get myself in jail for doing anything illegal. But she said to me, she's been around a long time. She's worked out in Las Vegas. She was around when there were lots of foreclosures on the market and it was a buyer's market, you know, and she said, you're going to do great because you don't mind running around with all these buyers all day. And when the market turns and you've treated everybody so well as a buyer's agent, they're still going to want to work with you. And you just have your pick. You just go out for the day, go look at 8 houses and say, oh, we want that one, write the contract and it's yours, you know, where in there right now, it's the complete opposite. You just beg for a house, you know, just please, sir, sell me your house. I mean, it's literally that level. People are writing, you know, the most heartfelt letters they can to the sellers about what they love about their house and what it would mean to them to get it. You know, it's crazy. I can't say the word crazy enough when I think about it.
Let's go back a little bit. What got you into real estate? Like, why did you want to become a real estate agent?
So it was kind of an accidental. I can actually go kind of far back. I have always, you know, I'm always looking for more, like what's my next thing? What can I do to better my life? I'm never satisfied, I guess is a word. but I'm often hesitant to dive into the new thing. So I worked at Granite State Glass for 12 years. Sometime in there, I got a little frustrated and I started poking around for stuff. And I was on Craigslist in the job section and I saw something about, you know, learn at your own pace, keep your job, become a real estate agent. And I met this guy, Randy Rush, who owns a company called Regarding Real Estate. And
what
I sat
down. What
a
cool name. Randy Rush?
Oh, yeah. I thought you meant the name of the company. The name of the company was sometimes frustrating because people are like, what do you mean regarding real estate? It was like his little joke. Like, I'm calling you regarding real estate. But yeah, Randy Rush is a cool name. Yeah, definitely. But people were always confused by the company name. But anyway, I met him. You know, he said, hey, you come work with me. You can come hang out with me any day you want. Your own schedule. Whatever I'm doing, you do. You know, if I'm out doing a listing appointment, come with me. If I'm sitting around writing letters to sellers, you know, sit in the office and help me do it, you know, whatever. And then I went back to work and I didn't talk to him again for years. I got into middle management at Granite State Glass and I had an absolute mental breakdown one day. I left screaming at people and walked out the door and said I was done and, you know, took my toolbox and walked away. And I had a 3-month-old daughter and my wife had just gone back to work from her maternity leave. And she's like, what are you going to do? You know, I'm like, I don't know. I'm going to go to bed and not think about it because I'm just nuts right now. And then the next day she said, you know, you talked about getting your real estate license years ago. Why don't you do that? You're not doing anything else right now. Just take the classes and get it done. So, that was October of 2017. I enrolled right in the classes, took the test in January, got my license and went to work with Randy. And yeah, that's how I stumbled into it. I didn't know I was going to love it. I didn't really know I was going to be good at it. Or, you know, you don't know with these things, right? You know, you have to make it on your own. And it's an 83% failure rate in real estate within the first 5 years. Randy was everything he said he was and said, yeah, he just let me work alongside of him, came with me to my appointments if I needed him. And, I learned a lot. I ended up, moving on for various reasons. No ill will there. Great company, great guy. Just had to, for my own personal growth, had to move on. But yeah, that's how it happened. And, I think the reason I stuck with it is it's funny. You see memes all the time. Like, oh, it must be great to be a real estate agent, all the freedom. And like, yeah, I was talking to my client at 10 o'clock last night. And now I'm up at 5 a.m. to go drive to a showing somewhere, you know? But in reality, there is freedom. Cause I tell my clients all the time, they apologize for dragging me out on a Sunday. I'm like, yeah, but on Tuesday I was playing at the playground with my kid, you know? So there's a balance to it. I like the flexibility. And I like being my own boss and I like helping people too. I mean, it feels good when I have one client that's constantly posting on Facebook about how awesome their house is and their neighborhood. And that just always feels good to me to know I helped them get to that point.
That probably is a really great feeling, especially where like, I feel like real estate is one of those things where it's not really like sales. Like people are coming to you. They're already ready. They like want a house. You know what I mean? Like they want,
Yeah, you're selling yourself. Like my license on it says salesperson. Real estate salesperson is what the license terminology is, but I don't see myself as a salesperson. You know, as a listing agent, if I list your house for sale, I have to sell it. I have to be a salesperson. I mean, fortunately, I've worked in a market where you don't really have to do much. But, you know, I've had some tough ones too. I've done some commercial sales where that's a whole different ball game, especially now. Commercial stuff is depleting becoming more vacant as everybody works from home. So, you know, I've had some challenging ones where I had to be a salesperson a little bit, but at the end of the day, the biggest thing you're selling is yourself and the fact that you're going to work hard for people and you're going to have their back and their interests in mind at all times.
If you could go back and give yourself some advice, like before you got started, maybe even before you started studying, like what are the things that you would try to tell yourself or any new people coming in to kind of get them ready that maybe you wish you had done in the beginning?
So, you know, this is going to sound cocky and weird, but I don't feel that I did much wrong. Nothing major. I mean, minor missteps, but no big piece of advice that I would say, hey, do this differently, because that's how I screwed up. I feel like I took a lot of the right steps. I feel lucky. It's not that I was smart and did the right steps. I lucked into a lot of the right steps. But I actually started kind of outlining, and I wrote a chapter. I was kind of going to do a book for new agents before I forgot what it was like to be a new agent, because I guess, and I guess this leads me, now you're making me think out loud, but it leads me to some advice that I can give, is don't listen too much to the people that have been around for like 20 years, because their start wasn't the same. You know, don't spend crazy money trying to learn. So I hired a company, I won't say their name, but it's a real estate coaching company. They coach, you get assigned a personal coach that you meet with weekly or bi-weekly, depending on what plan you sign up for. And it was a lot of money a month. And it just, the spending the money on that stressed me out more than what I was getting from it. So I'd say, don't try to spend yourself into success. There's a lot of basic free stuff you can do. And honestly, anything you want to learn is on YouTube. And there's plenty of people, like if somebody wants to get into real estate and they want to call me and pick my brain for as much time as they want, go out to lunch and talk about it, I'm more than happy to help people. And there's a lot of people like me too. They might be hard to find, but there's enough of us out there that are willing to help people. So yeah, that, I guess that's my, you made me think it out loud, but my big piece of advice, don't try to spend yourself into success. Just do the hard work that's free, and you'll be fine.
I was going to say, it kind of sounds like, cause you kind of talked about luck a little bit there. And, it sounds like you were pretty lucky to run into that Randy Rush guy. Cause he kind of like, do you think that having a mentor would be like a good move for someone like that?
Yeah. I guess it's almost completely necessary. Some of the big brokerages will actually pair you with somebody when they come on, when you actually, my company does that too. We just, the way we're set up, we don't really attract a lot of new people because new people are looking for support. Basically, the gist of the company I work for is we keep almost all of our commission, but in turn there's not a ton of resources coming from the company because there's not a lot of money going into the company. Right. And don't get me wrong, I'm well supported and I have all the tools I need. But somebody starting out needs probably a little more babying and handholding. So what a lot of brokerages will do is assign you somebody, but I've heard horror stories of the person just not caring to help, and you're giving this person a amount of money each month to help you out. And, so yeah, finding a mentor is great. And I've actually had people ask me where they should start. And one of the things I say is somewhere that the broker is going to help you, is going to actually sit down with you and go over things step by step and be there by your side. And even mine now, Crystal at East Key Realty, I call her right now, guarantee you she'd pick up the phone and walk me through anything, spend an hour with me talking if I need help, or even, I mean, I'll just be having a bad day or stressful situation and I can just call and tell her about it, you know. And that's sometimes that's enough, you know, just that's somebody awesome. somebody else that understands. So yeah, being well supported, and having a mentor that will walk you through it. But you know, if you don't, again, just go on YouTube and find, I follow this one guy out of Alabama. His name's Ricky Caruth. He does a real estate coaching program for free. And he sells 100 houses himself a year. It's just him and an assistant, which is crazy numbers. I was the top salesperson in East Key Realty last year with 35, to give you an idea of how many 100 is. So it's pretty crazy. But you know, he's literally online every day coaching people via Zoom calls like this, and puts out all kinds of free content on YouTube and Instagram. You know, there's plenty of ways to learn and be mentored for sure, if you can't find one personally.
That's the best part about all this technology around us. There's like, it's like, there's no mysteries anymore. There's right. Like, no matter what problem you have, you can just find it on YouTube and then well, I mean, have it solved.
Look at what just happened with the stock market, you know, like, just idiots figured that out. self-proclaimed idiots, you know.
So unbelievable.
Just because we have access to all the information now, you know, and anybody can figure out how anything works. And if you work hard enough and study hard enough, reverse engineer it and do it yourself.
I'm actually hoping to get someone on the podcast who was kind of a part of that. One of my friends who was into it and was a part of that. But it's just what that's unbelievable. Cause if you think like, even like 5 years ago, that wouldn't have been possible. Like the connection just wasn't there. And like the amount of money in the system just wasn't there.
Or just being able to make free stock trades.
Yeah.
That wasn't a thing.
I think Robinhood came out. Cause I actually adopted Robinhood fairly early. Cause I was managing a gym at the time. And one of the guys who came into the gym showed it to me. And I want to say I was still in Manchester. So like seven years ago that happened. So like before that was like the first one that was doing free trades. Yeah. Before that, like this would literally have never been possible. Like I feel like
I remember looking at stocks a long time ago and just going with the transaction fee, I'm going to need to see 10% gains before I even make any money. Like it didn't make any sense to do it on a small level.
Dude, I didn't even realize normal people could trade stocks before, like before yeah. Robinhood. Like I had no idea. I thought you must need like some kind of license or I didn't know what. Like I had literally no idea about stocks at all. That's one area of like education that schooling failed everybody so miserably. Is like
one of many, one of many. Yeah,
but like I actually thought that like you needed some sort of special license or something to trade stocks. Apparently you do not. Apparently
you need a license to do it for somebody else, but you can buy your own all you want.
Yeah, no, it's wild. I feel like we're coming up on a time where like we're going to see we're going to see some weird shit happening, I guess, is all I can. I
mean, we do every day, right? I mean, 2020 was just weird shit for days or forever. I mean, the stuff we just saw, we could go on. I mean, it could be its own podcast, you know. It's just crazy. Crazy. I keep using the word crazy. That's all I can say about it.
That's all it's been lately is fucking it's unbelievably crazy right now.
I saw today, what the hell was it? It was a headline that was like, Post Malone puts out a cover of some song.
Oh, I shared that.
That was you then. Yeah. What was the song?
It was, hold on, I'll pull it up. It was a Hootie and the Blowfish song.
Yeah, Post Malone puts out a cover of a Hootie and the Blowfish song as a tribute to the 25th anniversary of Pokemon.
Yeah.
And that's real. And it makes no sense, but somehow, like, it doesn't even phase you because nothing makes sense anymore. We're driving around Mars, taking pictures of Mars.
Right? I know, right? It's unbelievable. You know, we're shooting rockets into space. Or I'm fucking just a normal guy. Just some guy is shooting rockets into space.
Yeah.
Fucking unbelievable.
I mean, Elon Musk, he just got passed again, but he was the richest man in the world. And you listen to that guy talk, you're like, that's like a guy I hang out with, like at the bar. Like we're tipsy, like just coming up with harebrained ideas. And all you got to do is take some action and all of a sudden you're a billionaire, right? Like,
right.
If only it was that easy, but.
I will say one thing that is really, we met like a couple times, like a long time ago through a mutual friend. I don't even know if you remember it, but we like kind of reconnected on Facebook, like maybe like a year ago or so. And I got to say, man, like you are really impressive. Like you have drive and you have, like a lot of people talk it, like a lot of people say it, that they want to improve themselves, they want to like shoot for the moon, but like you're actually doing it. You're like fucking killing it.
Man, I go back and forth. I have not felt like I've been killing it lately, to be honest. I definitely let the pandemic beat me in a lot of ways, but thank you. I appreciate that. It gives hearing that makes me want to do it more, I guess. For sure.
Yeah, no, I'm not trying to put you on the spot. It's just impressive to me that, or I always like to see that in people. Cause like, I think of myself as like a driven person, you know, like I try to like do things or like constantly be kind of moving forward. I try to always like, I try to have that mentality where like, if I can just move the needle, like 0.1% or 0.01% every day, then like eventually that will add up and I'll get somewhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that's the best attitude to have. I think probably one of the biggest ways I defeat myself is because I want it to happen in big chunks and then I'll just freeze, you know, and not make that progress, the small progress that I need to make to get to the next step.
I think that's definitely, I think that is one of those things that like you just, anyways, I think you actually, even if you don't feel it, like from the outside looking in, you definitely show it. And like, you're always talking positive. You're always like hustling. You can just tell. And it's really cool to see. Anyways, I'll stop complimenting you now. Cause I don't know.
I mean, that's fine. I like it, but
you're like, keep it coming.
I don't know how to respond to it.
I can tell. when did you start to see the market kind of get into this kind of position we're in?
So, you know, again, I started in 2018 and it was already considered a seller's market. It was really my second sale, but the first sale I did was a foreclosure for an investor. So that was the first retail sale I really did. I remember there were four offers, I think. And I just sat on the phone with the listing agent, like just became her best friend and got her to tell me pretty much everything I needed to know to write a winning offer. And we got it. But you know, even then it was competitive. But really I think it got worse, when COVID-19 hit, because two things. People don't want a bunch of people coming through their houses, so they're not listing. They don't want to deal with strangers coming in, especially the people who would traditionally be selling to make room for the younger people, which is the older generation, right? They are like, I can't take the risk of somebody bringing this virus in here. So they're not listing, and people are working from home. They're looking at their living situation going, I can't live here anymore and I want a house. There's people moving in, you know, people that traditionally worked in Boston want to live here now because they're working from home at least 4 days a week. And they don't mind on that one day they have to driving over an hour into the city. They don't mind. So, you know, I think it really was a huge uptick, you know, April or so of last year. There was a real quick time where it got a little easy. I actually had my most productive 6 weeks or so where we had the shutdown last year, because I was just like, people are freezing and there's houses staying on the market that shouldn't be staying on the market. Let's go make offers on them. And I got a few buyers under contract pretty quickly over those few weeks, but it got weird. I mean, I remember I didn't
can we
actually
open stop. Can we stop on that?
Yeah.
So like what, that's smart. Obviously, like that's a smart thing. Like, does that, when you're thinking of like going to work in the morning, are you like taking into account a lot of like those kind of social things, like a lot of those outside sources that maybe aren't directly affecting the real estate market, but are, you know what I mean? Because like, absolutely.
You just said, I mean, if you think about it, everything affects the real estate market. I mean, you got air to breathe, food and water, and then your housing. That's like the third most important thing to people. Like, you know, if you don't have a house, you really or somewhere to live indoors, like you don't have a lot. So everything that goes on affects the housing market, really. So yeah, I mean, you always got to be a little bit in touch. One of the things that business coaches recommend and motivational speakers and everything is like shutting off the news and like closing yourself off from everything that's going on in the world. And it's like, you kind of gotta know what's going on in the world, because it, like, you gotta see it coming a little bit, you know. And I don't think, even though I remember I was last year in January, I was in Orlando, we went to Disney, and everyone was talking about coronavirus, but like not talking about it coming here. It was like, you know, it was like that could never come here. Like thinking about it like Ebola, you know, where it breaks out in Africa and then it gets shut down real quick. Everyone, I think, thought of it that way. And in hindsight, should have been like, oh, that could really affect what I do for work, you know. And they actually, the first list of essential workers that came out did not include real estate agents.
I remember that.
Yeah. So like that could have been an even bigger effect, because if some states did completely shut down transactions.
I remember one of my friends, Nicole, I've actually had her on the podcast before. She was saying that like it was really up in the air, because like if you had contracts up in the air, like nobody wanted to move like on them, and it was like confusing for everybody whether or not especially like I guess if the real estate agents were not able to work, but there's like I guess some sort of like limit on those contracts, right, where they only last for like a couple like x amount of time before they expire.
Well, there's a closing date, and you know, if you fail, if one party, if the buyer seller doesn't close on that closing date, they're in default of the contract because they agreed to close. So I told every single one of my clients that I had a contract pending with, I said, I will, no matter what they do, I'm going to be working for you. If they want to find me, like I have to, I have a fiduciary responsibility to represent that client. There's no way I'm not going to do it. But then, you know, they were saying, you know, no showings or anything. We had, like, I had people that had already sold their house that needed a new house. They can't, you can't not, there's houses sold. They need a place to go. I have to continue on. And like, fortunately, our board of realtors went right after the state immediately. And that was cleared up within like 24 hours. We were on the essential list again. And like every single one of us was writing letters. I put it all over my social media, tagged Governor Sununu, like, you know, anything I could do to say, hey, look, you can't stop us from working. The place, people having a place to live is one of the most important things there is.
Are you keep bringing up social media. Is social media a big part of like real estate, being a real estate agent now? Like, what's that transition like? Because you must still see a lot of, we see it in pretty much, as someone else who is also really into social media, like marketing and stuff like that. Like you see like kind of the old guard who still thinks of it as like something that kids do. And then like now there's people who are still coming up. And I think those other people are like the older people are starting to transition over. But like, what's that like kind of being on, you know, essentially the edge of like the market?
So, So for me, I mean, I knew immediately getting my license, social media was going to be how I built my business. I mean, there was no question. That's how I communicate with everyone I know. You know, I didn't have much of a social life. I still don't, you know? So it's like, I have certain friends that are not on social media, and like, I run into them. They're like, oh, what are you up to? I'm like, oh, you don't know? Like, you know, it's weird that when you run into somebody that doesn't know everything that's going on in your life. Cause my life is posted on the internet daily. So, you know, but I think most people, you know, there's some longtime real estate agents that their referral network, their past client database is so big, they don't have to do it. You know, people are coming to them. But I don't know like any better way, any more better bang for your buck. I mean, it's free. And if you do pay for advertising, it's pretty cheap. Like go try to buy a radio ad, that reaches as many people as $100 Facebook ad, you know, you're just not gonna do it. So yeah, I mean, it's number one. It just keeps me top of mind. I mean, and I've had plenty of people that, you know, weren't in my circle that are now in my circle because they found me on Instagram or Facebook or whatever. But the biggest thing is just keeping in front of the people I already do know. So that way, when they think real estate, I'm the first person that comes to mind, they refer me. And when it's time for them to do something, they talk to me. And real estate's, you know, it's not I'm constantly tagging my friend Johnny's Barbershop, Stanley's Barbershop, whenever anybody's looking for a barbershop, and like that client comes in every 10 days, you know, some of them, not you, but
you don't need to, when it's looking this thin up top, you know what I mean? You need as much coverage as possible. Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, so, but with real estate, you know, it's once every 5 years, that's like the average. So you need to constantly be reaching out and being connected, and social media is like really the easiest way to do that. I know there's a lot of agents out there, and I should do more of this, and I don't, that do mailings 4 times a year. Like you do your Christmas cards, you send out, like at the beginning of football season, you send out a football schedule that you can, that's a magnet you can put on your fridge. Like a lot of different things like that to stay constantly connected. But for me, it's just posting every day. And you know, I post a picture of a house I went to every other day, you know? So
this is the wild thing about the internet. There are literally Instagram pages right now that make more money than both of us combined every year. Oh, yeah. And all they do is sell referrals for like real estate agents. So like, they're like real estate pages, they'll post houses. And then like when people ask them, like, and then they refer them to the agent, they get some sort of referral fee. It's fucking wild.
So you have to have to accept to be paid a referral fee. I think they will allow you to go up to $100, but to get a real referral fee, which is usually 25% of the whole transaction.
Oh,
you actually have to have not the whole transaction, 25% of the total commission. You have to have a real estate license to accept that. So all these companies that you see, Zillow, Trulia, Realtor.com. Realtor.com isn't even owned by the Board of Realtors, who trademarks the word realtor. They just have the licensing to use it. all these websites just exist to sell referrals to real estate agents. That's all they do. That's the only way they make money. So that is the essence of where the money is in real estate is referrals. A lot of people, they'll stop selling real estate and just keep their license to get paid for referrals. And that's, you know, I tell people all the time, I'll help you in anywhere in the country. And that's because I can make money referring somebody. And I do know people a lot of places, but I'm also probably better at picking a random agent in a place than you are, because I know the questions to ask them. I know what to look for. I know how to like tell if they're legitimate, because I see it every day. There's plenty of real estate agents who have never sold a thing. I mean, everybody's going to start somewhere, but personally, I don't want to be the first person.
You know, I don't want to be referring my grateful, friends to
I'm grateful for the first people that worked with me, but I wouldn't have wanted to be in their shoes, to be honest.
Where do you think the market is going? Do you see it continuing to rise like this, or do you see it kind of leveling off?
It's got to level somewhere. I mean, we're going to hit a point where there's just no more money in the system to drive it forward. Right. I mean, I'm not an economist. I'm not a financial advisor. I'm not like equipped to really make a prediction, but it's got to level out. Do I think it'll crash? I think that's what everybody keeps asking and is in the back of everybody's mind. And I don't. And the biggest thing, biggest reason why is if you go back to the last crisis, if you looked at what people owed on their homes versus what the houses were worth, I saw a chart. I wish I could find it again, but those numbers were on audio, not video. but those numbers were really close together. Those two lines of those charts were really close together. And if you look at it now, people have a lot of equity in their house. So say you get in trouble, you just list your house and somebody comes and buy, even if you have to sell it below market value, somebody's going to buy it and get you out of there. You know, there's all these, we buy houses cash people. You see those signs all over the road. I mean,
I was just about to ask you about those.
That's legit. Those people really do that. They show up and hand you cash for your house. And you know, if you've got 40% equity in your house, they can easily get you out of it and they can turn a profit on it, no matter what condition the house is in, what situation you have. So I don't
see. How do those work? Like, is there a scam somewhere in there?
I mean, I'm sure there's scammers, but that's mostly a legitimate business. You know, it depends on your definition of scam. I mean, I think some people think real estate agents are scam artists because we're just taking a commission for selling your thing. Like, we don't actually have products, right? You know, but they're there to make a profit. So the biggest thing they do is find houses that would be hard to sell on the retail market. Lots of repairs needed, hoarder type houses, houses that have title defects, or right now something that's big is tenants that are behind on the rent and you can't evict them. So say you're a landlord that everybody pictures landlords as these evil people sitting on piles of money, but there's a lot of people in New Hampshire that own two or three buildings and they're not really making much of a profit off their rent. So say they get three or four tenants that aren't paying between two or three buildings, they have a mortgage to pay. So they've got to get out of it. So a lot of, I'm just describing a bunch of situations, but for why a house would be hard to sell in the open market. Because if I listed a house and there's three tenants that are behind on the rent, nobody's going to want to buy it. You know, with leases signed, they can't evict them, you know, not that I ever want to see anybody evicted. But those guys will come in and make a cash offer. They'll take care of whatever problem there is. And then once they can sell it on the retail market, they'll get it back to the retail market. The other thing they'll do is, they'll enter into an assignable contract, which means they have an agreement to buy the house, but they can sell that agreement to somebody else. So that there's a lot of money in that. Basically, you know, you find a house, you offer them $150,000, you assign that contract to somebody else, charge them $160,000. You walk away with $10,000. You never even have possession of the house. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of legitimate people, but they're not offering you retail for the house because they have to make profit on it, you know?
Yeah. I shouldn't have used the word scam. I should just clear that up. Like, you're right. Anybody, anytime anyone is trying to make a profit, people consider it a scam. Cause like, I know people say that about body work. They're like, you know, you guys charge ridiculous amounts of money, but they don't understand that, like, all the overhead and the work that goes into it. You know what I mean? So like, you're right. It's probably not a scam. It's just, it's a situation that maybe not everyone would need, I guess, would be a better way to describe it.
I mean, we live in however you feel about it politically, we live in a capitalistic society and it just is what it is. I don't like a lot of facets of it personally, but it is what it is. And everybody's trying to survive and everybody's trying to do the best for their family. And if there's a need for a service or products, you know, it's going to be used. And there is a need for somebody that can come along and buy a house with cash. And that's why those people exist. Don't sell your house to one of those people before you've talked to a real estate agent, because they're not going to tell you what, you know, it's against their best interest to tell you what the market value actually is of your home.
Right.
They're trying to buy it for as cheap as they can. So make sure, but you know, if you, I have a contact. It just actually happened to me recently. I had a property. I'm like, I don't think I can really throw this on the market. It's not going to sell. It's got too many problems. And I'll actually connect you with somebody I know who's reputable and does it for the right reasons and actually cares about the people he's buying the houses from, and does a lot of stuff to make sure he gets those people from point A to point B. He's not just trying to buy their house just to make the money. It's also to help people get out of bad situations.
Right. I'm sure if you need that must be like a godsend. You know what I mean?
There's not a lot of people that are successful by doing shitty things to people, right? I mean, you're usually most successful people, and there's exceptions to this, of course, but most successful people have a lot of success because they treat people right. I mean, it's pretty true. There's evil people out there with a lot of money too, but most successful people are doing the right things for other people, and that's how they find their success.
100%. I agree with that statement, because like you said, I mean, you can only burn so many bridges before you actually I don't think you said that. I just said that just now.
I didn't, but that's okay. That is something I say.
But you can only burn so many bridges before nobody's gonna work with you anymore.
Yeah,
you know, absolutely. So like, unless you like keep that one bridge of some rare billionaire who you never fucked over, like, other than that, like, you should probably like just do the right thing and be honest and and try to be as helpful as you can to people.
Every day I have to wrestle with that. Is like, okay, I have to tell this person the truth, so that means I don't make money. You know, that's literally every day in real estate.
Was it weird going from, because you said you used to work at the glass company, was it weird going from like a blue collar job to like that, to kind of like being in a suit and tie and that
kind of thing? I wear a suit and tie about twice a year, but I kind of tried a little bit of a transition because I worked in the field for years. I did replacement windows, auto glass. I did all the stuff hands-on for years. Then I came in, I was in the office for 3 years doing customer service and estimates and management, scheduling, all the office and administrative stuff, basically whatever was needed office-wise. I did that for 3 years. So I kind of had a little bit of a transition. It's weird. I go back to one of my first jobs when I was in high school, was working at Burger King. And they promoted me to a shift manager in like 2 weeks. And I just always, I customer service is customer service, whether you're selling them a cheeseburger or you're selling them a mansion, people just want what they want. You know, they want to be respected, and they want you to treat them right and do the right thing for them. They don't want spit in their burger, and they don't want their septic system backed up. You know, it's all the same. It's just treating people right. So I didn't feel weird about it at all. I felt completely prepared to do it. I've definitely known people from the trades who I don't think would transition well, but for me that was no problem at all. I'm sure you're laughing because you can picture a lot of people spraying cars and sanding Bondo.
Dude, I can picture so many people
that wouldn't necessarily do great with, a frantic 7 p.m. call from somebody over a $10,000 deposit check or something.
I don't know how I would handle that, to be honest with you. I would probably panic too. $10,000 is a lot of money. Is it ever strange dealing with like the amount of money that you're dealing with? I mean, like, I know obviously you're not holding it, but like, I feel like, especially when I was first buying my house, it was like, you know, we bought ours. I don't even remember what I paid for it. Like 180, I believe we paid 180 for it. And it's like, it's just, at some point it just like became a number. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. Well, whatever, you know what I mean? It's like, I was just like, offer 10,000 more, you know, like it doesn't matter at that point. Cause you don't.
Right. Well, the number I look at for people when I'm trying to, you know, help people wrestle with their own finances is what you're going to be paying monthly, because very few mortgages actually get paid off. So, you know, you need to make sure that client is getting into a situation where they're not going to be house poor. Every time they pay the mortgage, you don't want their bank account to be empty. Because guess who they're going to think of every time that happens to them, you know? So that's the number that freaks me out when I see people taking on huge mortgage payments, the actual, you know, knowing what they make and what their finances are too, you know, it's relative. Like I think we were talking about it before we started. This was, I sold $600,000 house to a doctor. The guy makes plenty of money to cover that. I know that. If somebody that makes $15 an hour wanted to buy the same house and somehow got pre-approved for it, I would feel bad about letting them do it, you know? but the actual like total number doesn't really, like, just like you said, what's another $10,000? Yeah. Like, to get into, especially with how fast things are moving right now. That's what I've been telling a lot of people. Like, you know, yeah, you might feel like you're overpaying, but in 6 months, your house is going to be worth way more than that. I have one that's been under contract since October, and I'm looking at that going, she couldn't get the same contract now, you know, or even close to it, you know, because it's the values have appreciated that much in the last 4 months.
I bought my house about 2 years ago for, I'm pretty sure it was 180, and we just had another house in my neighborhood that was the same, just got what's it called when the bank comes out and looks at it?
Appraisal
for 210. which is just like, that was 2 years ago. It's like 40,000 dollars. That's fucking insane. Does that seem possible? Does that seem impossible?
Oh, it's not impossible at all. my house is my house I bought in 2014, and it's gone up roughly $100,000.
What? That's crazy. That's awesome. Good for you.
It's nuts. But the thing is, like, I could sell it, and then I could take that $100,000 and have a nice big down payment. I could probably get myself into a house twice the size, but I'll double my mortgage payment still, because of what the housing values are.
Right.
So I'm like, personally, I'm just like, I'll keep living in my little cape on the west side and keep my low payment. It's great.
Now there must be a way that like people can take that $100,000. Like if your house goes up $100,000, for you to take that and like transition into more house, would that just be like, or not more house, but like there must be a way to make that come out where like in a positive, you know what I mean? Whether it's moved to a poorer area or whatever, not poor.
Yeah. So the way I always look at it, like the reasons you move right now, like you're either downsizing, you're moving somewhere else, or you're upsizing. There was a time for a little bit where I think it was a pretty easy, like, okay, I have this equity, I can move and have roughly the same payment with much more house. Actually, I did just help a family do this. I sold their condo in Manchester, got them into a house in Loudoun. They were paying a much higher interest rate on their old house. They went from a condo, a two-bedroom condo, to a big three-bedroom house with land and everything, for roughly the same mortgage payment. Plus they got cheaper insurance because I hooked them up with my insurance guy. So they were actually paying less money for a much bigger house. It did work out for them. They had enough equity, and it wasn't even a ton of equity, but there was the mortgage, it was the rates coming down that really got them there. And I say this daily, if you haven't refinanced in the last year and a half, you're paying way too much for your house right now. The rates are so stupid low.
Gonna write that down.
I'll hook you up with somebody that can do a refinance for you. I'm sure you're paying too much for interest. If you're over 3.25, I think is what they're telling people right now.
We had a very weird situation when we moved into our house. So basically we got an eviction, not an eviction notice, like we did something wrong, but like an eviction notice because the landlords were selling the house. We had 60 days to get out, and we kind of like had to scramble. So we spent 30 days looking for another apartment. At the time we had a dog who was a pit bull who I loved very much, and there was no way I was going to lose her. So
almost impossible to rent.
Almost impossible. It was impossible.
I know a landlord that allows pit bulls. He has, and he just sold almost all his apartment units. So maybe it is impossible now.
We were lucky. The only one I knew. We had two, both of our landlords that we were managed to find were very understanding about Charlotte. She had her own issues, but she was a great dog and I loved her very much. And there was no way I was going to lose her. Anyways, long story short, we couldn't find a place to rent. And so we were like, well, let's just get a house, you know? And at the time I didn't have good credit, and we managed to get a house. And I don't think we overpaid, but the amount of money that I pay every month is very high just because I had very poor credit at the time. I didn't have, it was so sudden. We didn't even, you know what I mean? And we had to scrape together all this money, and it was just awful. But anyways, long story short, I probably am paying too much money for this house, and I should probably look into
most
that.
Likely. Yeah. You said 2 years ago?
This is our third year.
So you're probably, your rate's probably in the fours, I'm guessing.
I think it was almost five.
Yeah, definitely refi. Okay. And you're probably paying mortgage insurance too.
Yes,
I am. And most likely you've increased your equity enough to get out of your mortgage insurance too.
That would be amazing. I always said I was one of those people who was like, credit's stupid. I'm never going to have to worry about credit. I'm never going to need credit as I was growing up. And then I fucking needed credit, and it was like getting punched in the face. Like, you have no idea how much you need credit until you fucking need it. And then when you don't have it, it's like, It's literally like tying your shoelaces together and trying to run a race. It's like, so just take care of your credit, people, please. It's very important. So anyways, just as a little lesson to everybody. So because my credit was so bad, I have to pay $300, no, $240 something a month just in case I foreclose, so the bank gets paid back by this insurance company.
That's a really high mortgage insurance too. I guarantee you, you can do something to fix that.
I probably should.
Were you in FHA too?
No, we weren't. We were the house.
That conventional?
We had to go conventional because the house we got, I don't remember exactly the reason. We had
condition issues.
Yeah, maybe. I think it's because it's a, so we own half a duplex, but it's not.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Those are pretty tough. It's a condex.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are pretty tough to get through FHA financing. Yeah.
So we didn't get an FHA. We got a conventional. And then we also, there was a bunch of issues. I'm not trying to complain. I don't mind. I mean, I like my house and I'm happy here. And I'm happy with the fact that I got to keep my dog.
Get that payment down.
But I will be refinancing. So yeah. I'm glad that we had this conversation. I got one more question for you before we go. I don't even know what the term is, but if you could represent somebody either buying or selling a house, anybody in the world, who would it be and why?
That is a really interesting question. So I always have these thoughts in my head, like that some random famous person will find me, somebody with a lot of money. Like I always daydream about this, like just, hey, I want to put an offer on this $4 million house on Winnipesaukee. Like I have that constantly. But like on a more realistic level, like one thing that I always thought would be cool. And what I was doing a podcast of my own called Faces of Manchester. And I really wanted to get I know it would take a lot of work and like a lot of pestering, but Adam Sandler's mom still lives in Manchester. I really wanted to try to get her for an interview. And then like, I was like, oh, and if I did that, like make a connection with them, like maybe I get to sell her house, like, and be like, not that, Adam Sandler's done anything cool in the last few years, but Billy Madison was my like favorite movie as a kid. So
Uncut Gems was pretty good. Did you see
that? You know, I never watched it. Everybody says it's great. I just stopped. You know what I was doing for a while? This was like some real bad like pandemic binge watching, but I was watching every bad Netflix straight to Netflix movie that he made with who's the guy he always does the movies with?
Kevin James.
The little guy.
Oh, I can never remember his name.
Not Dana Carvey, but looks like Dana Carvey from Black Sheep. I was always in the movies.
Oh, David Spade.
David Spade. There we go. I watched like six bad movies with him, with David Spade and Adam Sandler. Like
that can't be true because David Spade has never made a bad movie.
No, he has. Oh, go do some digging on Netflix. There's some bad ones.
Adam Sandler is. No, go ahead.
That I was just going back to your question. It's like I really had no answer for that because, like, I guess I don't really put a lot of people on a pedestal, and I'm just happy to work with anybody. But I guess that's the house he grew up in, like. It still looks the same as when he was a kid. It was on Chronicle not long ago. That's why I know that. I think it was Chronicle. I guess I'll stick with that answer.
All right. That's
something that's interesting.
I like that. Adam Sandler is such an awesome example of like New England. Cause it feels like no matter how rich he gets, he's just like a fucking New England kid. You know,
one thing that is great about his existence, Central High School, Manchester, like, and went on to do what he did. Just, it comes to show you, it doesn't matter where you are, where you came from, like, you have a dream, chase it, and get it done, you know? I think that's cool. That's my favorite thing about him, being somebody, I'm not from Manchester originally, but I've been here a decade now. I feel like it's my home for sure. So, like, I think that's really cool. And I'm raising a daughter here too. And I like her to know. I was watching Sesame Street with her today and Adam Sandler was on Sesame Street. And I was like, oh, he's, he's from Manchester. And I was like, he went to the same school as mommy. And she goes, oh, does he miss mommy? I'm like, nah, they never knew each other.
I know. They get Central High School was home to G.G. Allen and Adam
G.G. Allen, I'm not so proud of.
Oh, come on.
Not so proud of G.G. It's a fun story. Have you seen that documentary on Amazon?
I haven't. There's another documentary out.
Yeah. Oh, it's.
I had seen the original one. I don't remember what it was called.
Hated in the Nation.
Is that the new one or the old one?
That's the old one. This one's just called like the Allens or something. It's a lot of stuff with Merle, but it's with his mom too. Tons of stuff with his mom up. She's in Lincoln still.
I'm a huge G.G. Allen fan. Not so much because I think that, well, it's not so much that I loved his music or like, I just think like, is what, like, there always needs to be people to push the envelope and like, love him or hate him. Like, he was going to do what he was going to do. You know, dude, I love
pushing
that.
The envelope. Sure. But like, I don't want to push the envelope in the way of throwing shit at people.
Yeah. You don't want to, but he did. And he
I don't
did
want it,
it
done you know? To me. I don't want it happening. I don't want to see it. Like, I don't like, no,
nah.
don't want shit. So part, if you don't mind keeping going, but so I was in Yellow Stitches.
Yep. Excellent band.
A couple of guys from Yellow Stitches actually went to school with Gigi's daughter, and they like she didn't know about him.
No.
And like she knew, but like didn't fully know. I mean, this was the 90s. Like there wasn't, you know, access to everything. You couldn't just Google somebody's name and find out everything that ever happened and everything they did, right? You know, and they like brought her in stuff and showed her stuff. Kind of odd.
That is kind of odd. I wonder how'd she handle it.
Not well.
Was her last name Allen?
I don't believe so. I think she had a different last name. I think the mother did that intentionally.
Yeah, I would imagine that would probably.
But yeah, I was like. They told me, I'm like, that was kind of shitty, you guys.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, but I was thinking maybe she like appreciated it, but maybe
No, from how I remember it being told, I haven't talked about this with those guys in a long time. But the way I remember it is she did not like it at all. And it was an awful, awful thing for them to do to this.
Well, I'm very sorry you had to go through that. Cool, man. Well,
I didn't.
No, I was speaking to her as if she was listening right now.
You might. You never know.
That's the cool thing about the internet. All right, man. Well, I'm going to let you go. I really appreciate you coming on with me today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Where can everybody find you?
Instagram 603_real_estate. That's the place I'm most active. I do have my own website at www.alexlachance.realtor. And you can search for properties and stuff on there. Facebook, Alex Lachance. I have a business page, personal page. I friend anybody, unless you look like a Russian bot. I'll accept your friend request. So
he accepted mine. So he'll fucking accept anybody.
Just about anybody's. Yeah. I used to say yes to everybody. And then I realized I was like, oh, I'm friends with like 47 fake accounts.
I have a rule.
I'm going to filter it a little bit more.
It takes seven mutuals to get onto my Facebook.
Yeah, but some of these fake accounts will friend request so many people that they'll have, by the time you see it, they'll have seven of your friends already.
Once you look at who it is, though, you can tell. You're like, oh, yeah, no, he definitely fell for that.
Yeah. True.
Well, awesome, man. I hope you have a wonderful night, and thank you very much for coming on.
You too.
Bye. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to the show. I hope you enjoyed it. If you can, do me a favor and go and give me a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. If that's where you're listening, I would really appreciate it, and it would help me out a ton. Thank you so much, everybody. I hope you have a wonderful day.